Architecture Talks, the podcast about architecture from Jung.
Feeling or analysis?
Feeling.
Storytelling or a clean structure?
Storytelling, always, please.
Remote work or offline work?
Remote, always, from the beginning, yeah.
Do you agree on everything, Kathy?
I agree on everything, 100%. Of course. Yes.
It's a match.
Yes.
Perfect. So let me introduce our today's topic. In Spain, opening a melon is a way of initiating a long overdue conversation. This is precisely what Maria Lilo Feliz and Kathy Figueredo, the founders of Melon Breakers, do. As an interdisciplinary studio, they work across brand strategy, narrative, user experience, and spatial design. Their projects emerge from a unique combination of disciplines. Branding meets journalism, and architecture meets community building. At the core is a single question: how can space, whether physical or digital, become a catalyst for better, more collaborative ways of creating and engaging? Perfection isn't the goal. It's often the problem. Their spaces invite appropriation. Change is a part of the concept. Trust matters more than control, even, or perhaps especially, in client relationships. In today's Jung Architecture Talks podcast, we, Diana Slavic and Eva Herrmann, explore these issues and explain why breaking melons is not just a metaphor, but a method of creating spaces that encourage change, foster trust, and build lasting communities.
Hello, and a very warm welcome to our Jung Talks podcast. Nice to have you with us.
Hello.
Thank you very much to have us in your podcast. It's an honor.
We are very curious about your name. So in Spain, opening a melon means starting a long overdue conversation. You've made that idea part of your name and your method. Why is this so central to your work?
We shall ask uncomfortable questions always to our clients. And 2 years ago with Maria, we decided to ask ourselves these uncomfortable questions. And really, we ask ourselves what more we can offer to our clients and if really it was all we have to give back to the world with our ancient studios and if we need really to go deeper in our purpose behind our work, no? To really give back more to the world. And well, our response to that was really important and very clear. We wanted to change the way we work, we think, we give value to our clients. And literally, our clients said always, oh my God, when we are working with you, you always open new things, open new melons, and you make us think about new things. So it was clear for us to really make this positive attitude and positive way to think and methodology it's our own methodology in the core of our business. So it's why our name is Melon Breakers, because we break melons. It's an expertise, a science of us to break melons, really.
So the official brief is just the tip of the iceberg.
Yeah, I think that the point is that we try to go beyond the expectations from our client and from our own expectations in every project. So it used to happen that we were working on a project and suddenly we discovered that there was an interesting path that we can walk with our client and we decided to show them this path, which is not in the brief. It's like, you know, you want to create this, but if you go some steps back, you can see that there are more possibilities to do this in a more powerful and meaningful and useful way. And most of the time, as Kathy said, our clients say that, hey, you open this melon because we have never think about it, or we have think about it, but we were not brave enough to go in this direction. So at one point when we were creating our own branding, which is a very tough job for brand designers because you are always your worst client, we were trying to make a recap of what we have lived and experienced in our former studio. And it came in a natural way. It's like, do you remember when they told us that blah, blah, blah? And it's like, we are natural melon breakers. And it started as a joke because we make the literal translation into English. We know that this doesn't work in English at all, but that's the point. It's like the joke and the fun. And as I said, it started as a joke, but at some point it's like, that's what we are. So let's face it and let's be brave ourselves and let's create this in our own way and with our own rules.
And everybody is asking the question, where does this name of Melon Breakers come from, no?
Absolutely. And the best thing is that when you explain the story and you say that every brand, every company, every professional, every person has his or her own melons waiting to be open, that's like a super powerful insight because we all have pending conversation with ourselves. So it connects in a very, very easy way and it opens the conversation.
You describe your approach as working with new eyes, and your team brings together journalism, branding, and architecture. What does that interdisciplinary mix unlock for you?
I think that for us, there are no other way to do it because I studied journalism and worked as a creative copywriter for many years, but I'm a lifelong storyteller. And I joined Kathy like 8 years ago, I think.
Yeah, more or less. Yeah.
And she had like a very special way of understanding the projects and the creative process. And we decided in our former studio to put everything together, because at the end, when we are talking about interior design or architecture, sometimes it's very endogamic. And it's like, we are architects and we are interior designers, and that's all what we look around. And we are not interior designers or architects from our background. We learn it by doing and because we are really passionate about what we do. So we put into the table what we are, what we have, and what we have learned, and make this crazy formula that at the end works, because there are many different outputs and inputs that come together and make a very like different result.
Yeah, that's it. At the end, Maria and I, we are fond of research. We are freaky researchers. At the end, we are like trends and mutation hunters. And we love this part. And this part is like the foundation of all our project, because it gave birth to a lot of stories and it gave birth to value to our client, because these insights are really opportunities of innovation, opportunity of narratives, opportunity of experiences, and opportunity to connect with our clients, and opportunities for the client to connect to with their audience. So as Maria said, we have another perspective of the world, another view of the world and the way we work. And as we are not architects, or we are not interior designers or graphic designers, we make things in a different way. So it's why I think we cracked and opened the melon so easily for our client, because they never seen this kind of methodology before.
Do you see yourselves more as a studio, a newsroom, or maybe even a think tank?
Oh, that's a good question.
Good melon. Do you know, I hate labels. That's something that makes me crazy, but you have to label yourself, no? It's like something you have to do. In a way, we are a studio because it's easy to explain. We are a studio and people need clarity. But at some point, I think that we are kind of a think tank or a collective of people who wants to do things in a very particular way as well.
Maybe it's just a mixture, you know?
No.
Mm-hmm. I think it's a mixture, yeah. Because at the end, yes, we have a methodology, but this methodology is very dynamic. At the end, we love the experimentation. And every client, it's a new adventure. It's a new path. So, yes, we've got some tools in our box to work with, creative tools, but we never use the same. So we never create in the same way. It depends really on the briefing, the client, the context we are living in. It depends on many things. So, yeah, I think we have this mixture, Maria said, no, this studio think tank where we experiment a lot.
So this is like a mixture between a service provider and a partner in crime. Could you describe it like this?
Very nice. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So where did you meet? Where did you find each other?
Well, I think it was like 8 years ago. Back then, Kathy had already co-founded our former studio and they were looking for a creative copywriter. And they posted a job alert in a creative platform. And I read it because back then I was working in a brand consultant that I will never do that again, I promise. And I was also working as a freelance and I saw that job alert and I think, hey, I don't know who these guys are, but the job alert was very interesting. It was like very empathetic and very emotional. And I thought I wanted to know who these people are and I want to see if we can collaborate together. And I wrote them a very, very emotional email. And 1 hour later, they called me. And 2 weeks later, we meet in Madrid in a very classical restaurant. And I thought, oh my God, where I am going. And then we started to collaborate in several projects and this like freelance collaboration at one point started to be more normal or it happens very often. And yeah, everything was very organic. After 2 years, they proposed me that I go as a partner in the studio. I wasn't ready, so I waited a little more. It was like a long friendship, I think, because we met, we talk, we start to meet, to work together. And at one point we associated together. And in this new chapter, we are like, yeah, partners in crime, I think, totally.
It's a match.
Yeah.
It's a match. I remember the day we received her letter. I was on my way to Copenhagen with the family. And normally I stop everything when I am with the family. And it was like the last emails before we take off. Okay. And it was like, oh my God, she's her. We got it. It was a creative love at first sight. It was really crazy. I never saw that again.
So you don't want to work as a brand consultant, as a classic brand consultant, but your clients are also brands. So what do you make different from the classic brand consultants?
For me, the problem was the corporate environment. I'm not a corporate person. I can't stand with that. And I felt like I was like betraying myself every day. That being said, I'm a brand lover. I truly believe in the power of brands. And I think that they can be real change makers. But you have to find the place to help the brands to do that. And I think that in a corporate environment, I wasn't able to do that.
The branding consulting, the traditional one, it's not the good one now in our context. We need to work in another way, to break the rules and really fresh air in this way to do that. I went from the consulting strategy and I assure you that it was not fun. And you can approach the project and co-create with the client and have a lot of better results if you really introduce the client in all the methodology, in all the work. So if you are working with agility, working with flexibility, working with an open mind and say, okay, come on, come with me, you're part of my team, and we will co-create this collaboration, this fresh creativity is different. So you got a result that you don't think you will have normally.
So you act like free radicals in the universe. You are allowed to ask these questions to break the melons, but not the brand people, because it's their own brand to change everything.
I don't think we are radicals, not at all. We only have a new way to work, and it's very simple, very near the clients. It's like a very near relationship. We are not gurus, so we are not divas. I don't know if you say that in English, but we are not this kind of person. It's like human by human, and we're working together to make your brand bigger and make your brand really long-lasting and improve your narrative, the user experience, and the community you have.
There is another thing that in times of crisis, we know that branding and even interior design is like the last priority. So I think we have to find ways to make it for the client more easy, more efficient, more agile, and large structures like brand consultants or even big studios of architecture or interior design sometimes can't afford to be this agile. So I think the times we are living now need that we change the way we are working and the structures we belong to.
You've called narration the glue in your work. What does that mean when it comes to designing space? I mean, you just started to talk a little bit about interior design and architecture. So how could you describe it?
Dale, dale, perdona. No, dale, dale.
No, lo tenías.
Adelante. I think that the narrative comes when you see many interior design spaces where the brand doesn't exist at all. There is like a big gap between the brand in the brand manual and the brand in the space. And we, as we see it, the spaces are like another dimension of the brand. So they have to breathe the same, and they have to show the brand DNA in every corner. So how can you explain this to the final client? From our perspective, the way is through the narrative. We created narratives for the spaces, and these stories articulate how the interior design is going to be. That means that everything helps the story. Every decision we make, from the first material to the last chair in the space, everything has a why, and everything helps to make this story real in the space. It's possible to think that this is like blah, 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 but when you visit a space where the narrative works, the connection between the people, the space, and the brand is much, much, much bigger and much powerful. And the last impression is what the client takes from the space.
Yeah, and I would say that as a visitor, if I think about either, I don't know, if it's a hotel or a restaurant or whatever, even if you're not into architecture or interior design as a professional, you feel that somehow everything feels right. Like everything fits into each other. And that's perfect. I mean, then a perfect job is done, definitely.
Yeah, it's true. A project has to be coherent. All the touch points from the brand to the user experience to the space, and then if you can touch the community, has to be coherent and has to sum up everything. Every detail has to sum up. So the narrative takes place in the space, but it takes place too in the user experience we work with. And we work not only with the audiences of our clients, but with the teams that they are working in this place too, because normally these people, I don't know why, nobody thinks about them. We have like a very global perspective of how we have to work with this narrative to make it real, and real in the sense of all the senses, sensorial at the end, and verbal too. It has to be a whole complete experience at the end to be coherent, as you said.
But if the space is perfect, how do you enable the people to make it their own? There's a gap between perfection and the openness to just go on.
The experience told us that we want to work not with perfection, because everything can be improved and always, but the people who are visiting our project, we don't know really why, but there is a real connection, a human connection, and they make the space their own place. So they move in the place in a way we didn't expect. It's like super crazy, because we saw them playing with the place or really fit with the place, and we never expect this kind of connection. It's like magic.
Totally. At the end, I think that the narrative combined with the experience design is like a very, very interesting way to approach the people. We have seen it many times in our projects, and it's, for us, it's the best part of work. To see the people reacting and having fun or making a little bit of reflection about something, that's, for me, is the most beautiful part.
There is a connection with the stories we are telling. Maybe it's because they are universal or they are very emotional. Like, you can project yourself in this story. So as you can project yourself, it's like, wow, it's for me. They made it for me. Really, I feel it. So it's mine. This space is mine.
Is there a difference between different sizes of brands, a small company or a big company, or is it always the same?
Well, we have worked with big brands, but we have also worked with entrepreneurs who have a dream and want to create something. We are able to navigate between these worlds. And for me, at one point, it's more pleasant to work with people who are starting from scratch, because you can see the real impact of what you're doing. If you create a good branding and a good interior design for a person who is like putting all together on the table, the satisfaction is huge. At least for me, it's not paid with money. I mean, with our former studio, we worked with independent hoteliers. And it's a dream to see how you can create everything from the beginning and help them to make this going and working. It's very special for me.
Yeah, and I think it makes you very proud to see them grow.
Yeah, and that's a way also to create long-lasting relationships. Because when you are with one person from the beginning and they are happy with the result, at the end they are always coming back to say, hey, look at what we are doing now, or even we are thinking about this new thing. Can you help us? What do you think about this idea we have? That's the point, because we are creating for persons. We are talking about brands, but we are creating and working for persons, not for brands like entities.
So you embrace imperfection. We were just talking about it as a part of your process. What does it mean to enable failure in a design context?
For us, it's very important to introduce failure in the process, because at the end, our team has to be confident to create. We have to feel secure. You have to feel secure if you said, okay, if I fail, doesn't matter. We will iterate and we'll go further another time and we can experiment and it doesn't matter. So, for us, failure is not something bad. At the end, when we fail, we always learn something. Failure is security. At the end, is learning, it's improvement, it's innovation, it's a lot of things. It's not so bad. At the contrary.
Have you ever been in the situation that something was perfected too early and then you realized that it was already gone too far? and you needed to go a few steps back?
I think it used to happen that because of our vision, sometimes we have pushed too much. Like, you can go in this direction, please come, it's good for you, come with me, I hold your hand and let's go together. And because you see it, and thanks to our experience, I think we know some things that can work. I mean, sometimes the clients are not ready. And at the beginning, it was something like very frustrating. It's like, come on, please, join me.
Don't you see that it's going to be perfect?
Yeah, it was quite annoying. So there was a moment, like a momentum, in which we said, hey, we have to be humble and we have to understand that not all the clients are going to see it. And there is not a problem about that. We can push a little bit, but if they are not ready, the client is right. I mean, it's like the typical quote that we have heard always, but it's their project, it's their company, they are adults. So we learn to listen better. So nowadays we try to manage our own expectation as well. It's like, this could be like, wow, but it's gonna be wow, and there's no problem.
We used to say in the studio, it's like private. We said, do we sell a Ferrari or do we sell a Renault? And more or less, we say, it depends on the context, the client, the briefing, and if the client is ready or not. And if the client has a vision, because at the end, they have to be brave. Because all the strategy we are working with, all the narrative, the user experience are very, very bold. And we love this boldness because at the end, we want to build long-lasting brands. So they have to have a very big personality, a strong storytelling to connect with their audience and really make this bold. Not all the clients are so brave to do that. But I think now with the experience we have, we are able to do that.
You also said that the brands are social actors. So there's something beyond design. They can contribute to culture and society. So this is also very important to enable the people to feel this power beyond design, beyond the story, beyond the brand.
I think that everyone has the opportunity to create a positive impact. It doesn't matter what we are talking about, what kind of job you have, or what's your company doing. Everyone can contribute. And at one point, we realized that what we were doing in our former studio didn't contribute at all. That was very painful for us. And it was the trigger that made us to think, okay, we have to rethink what we are doing and we have to try to find a deeper purpose for what we do, because Kati and I need that. We are not doctors, we are not teachers, but our job is very important and can truly contribute to the wellness of people, to the economies, to the culture, to translate nice values and nice stories. And that's what we are trying to do now. It's like, we believe truly in this approach and we believe truly in the power of brands, and brands now need to believe on their own and think, okay, I'm a restaurant. What can I do to contribute? You can do many things. You can believe how many things you can do. But the thing is to start making questions, opening melons and think, let's see. Who are my providers? Where did I buy this furniture? How are my staff conditions? And you can see that you can do a lot of things and create a super positive impact in your environment and the people who you work with and who you are in connection. So for me, that's a necessity in a personal way, but I think it's like also an obligation for every human being nowadays, because the small things can make big changes.
I think it's all about this user experience that we were talking before, because if a person comes into, for example, a restaurant, and you have the feeling that everything fits together and is part of this brand idea, it just makes you feel so comfortable. And it's not usual that you get it. So it's quite rare, I would say, to get like this full brand experience. But thinking about your brand, the interesting thing is that your work is completely remote. So there is no office, no static office where people can go to work, no fixed place. How does that influence the way you think about space and connection?
I think it's challenging because nowadays we are talking about this in our studio. We're having this discussion because we are getting more physical. As everything is going artificial, we need to go to the physical connection. And we don't have it because we don't have an office and we don't plan to have it. But I think that the point is to be able to create like a safe space, online safe space for the creativity, for every human being who is part of the team. I'm going to listen to you. I'm going to try to make you feel seen and valued and take care of. We used to meet our team before when we were in our former studio, and we had like 3-4 meetings every year. Also, when we were in Madrid, for instance, we meet regularly. There was like a real interest on seeing each other because that's something we miss as well. I mean, the human contact is very important, but now we are for the freedom and for the independency and the trust, flexibility. And we think that the point is that you can live wherever you want and have the life you want to live and then work, because we can't forget that the work is a part from our personalities and from our lives, but it's not the central one. And it should not be the central one, because if we are creating, we need to nurture from different things and have a life we are happy with. And we are seeing many young people in Spain moving like Madrid, because in Madrid is everything and they can pay the rent. They can go out because they don't have money. They need to travel like 15 minutes to meet a friend. So they are completely alone and isolated. And what's the point of that? So it's challenging because we need human presence. But if you create a safe space and you make people feel seen and valued and take care of, I think we can find a nice balance between the remote work and the team feeling.
So you are also not sitting in the same city. You're in Barcelona, Maria? Or where are you sitting right now?
I'm in Valencia.
And I'm in Denia. Denia is a little city by the sea.
And which countries do your collaborators come from, and how many time zones and different cultures?
Well, now we are starting with this new project. So we are working with national clients at the moment. But in our last chapter with Juana, we had the opportunity to start working with Mexican clients and also from Portugal. And it was very nice. And we want to try to work with different cultures and different clients, because as I said, we want to nurture ourselves with different perspectives. And that's something that it's in our bucket list.
So you are constantly on the move. It's part of your process and questions and everything.
Totally.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's in our DNA. We are flexible. We are remote. We are nomads, and we work with people all around the world. Yeah. If we think that the talent to work in this project is in Argentina, that's all right. We go for it. It doesn't matter where the people are, really. And we want to balance work and work with the best people in the world. It doesn't matter where they are.
That sounds fantastic. So we are already coming to the end of our podcast, which is a little sad because we would love to speak with you for at least a few more hours. To conclude our podcast, we always have a personal question.
Oh my God.
Dead or alive, who would you like to swap your life with for a day?
Wow, this is a big melon.
Let's break it.
It sounds crazy, but it's the first one who come to my mind, Leonardo da Vinci. Yeah, Leonardo.
I would say that I would love to meet my grandpa. I never met him, but I have heard so many stories that I think it would be nice to meet him and see how he was. That would be nice. Yeah, it's not something very professional, but let's get emotional.
This is a very, very nice way to conclude our discussion, because we need these emotional voices from you. And thank you very much for your time and your inspiring words. So it's to say goodbye from us until the next episode of the Jung Talks podcast. Thank you very much. Nice to have you with us.
A pleasure. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Kisses.
No.